The Pilgrim's Progress, Chapter 4. We resume with Christian engaged in a conversation with three virtues, and he's speaking with Charity. And Charity begins, "But did you not, with your vain life, damp all that you by words use by way of persuasion to bring them away with you? Christian, indeed, I cannot commend my life, for I am conscious to myself of many failings therein. I know also that a man by his conversation may soon overthrow what by argument or persuasion he does labor to fasten upon others for their good. Yet this I can say, I was very wary of giving them occasion by any unseemly action to make them averse to going on pilgrimage. Yet for this very thing they would tell me I was too precise, that I denied myself of things for their sake, in which they saw no evil. Nay, I think I may say that if what they saw in me did hinder them, it was my great tenderness in sinning against God, or of doing any wrong to my neighbor." "Indeed," said Charity, "Cain hated his brother because his own works were evil and his brother's righteous. And if your wife and children have been offended with you for this, they thereby killed themselves to be implacable for good, and thou hast delivered thy soul from their blood. Now I saw in my dream that thus they sat talking together until supper was ready. So when they had made ready, they sat down to meal. Now the table was furnished with fat things, with wine that was well refined, and all their talk at table was about the Lord of the Hill, as namely about what he had done, and wherefore he did, and what he did, and why he built that house. And by what they said, I perceived that he had been a great warrior, and had fought with and slain him who had the power of death, but not without great danger to himself, which made me love him all the more. For as they said, and as I believe," said Christian, "he did it for the loss of much blood, but that which put glory of grace into all he did was that he did it of pure love to his country. And besides, there were some of them of the household that said they had seen and spoke with him since he did die on the cross, and they have attested, and they had it right from his own lips, that he is such a lover of poor pilgrims that the like is not to be found from the east to the west. They, moreover, gave instance of what they affirmed, and that was, he had stripped himself of his glory that he might do this for the poor, and that they heard him say and affirm that he would not dwell in the mountain of Zion alone. They said, moreover, that he had made many pilgrims princes, though by nature they were beggars born, and their original had been the dunghill. Thus they discoursed together till late at night, and after they had committed themselves to their Lord for protection, they betook themselves to rest. The pilgrim they laid in a large upper chamber, whose window opened toward the sun rising. The name of the chamber was Peace, where he slept till break of day. And then he awoke and sang, 'Where am I now? Is this the love and care of Jesus for the men that pilgrims are, thus to provide that I should be forgiven and dwell already the next door to heaven?' And so in the morning they all got up, and after some more discourse they told him that he should not depart till they had showed him the rarities of that place. And first they took him into the study, where they showed him records of the greatest antiquity, in which, as I remember my dream, they showed him first the pedigree of the Lord of the Hill, that he was a son of the Ancient of Days, and came by an eternal generation. Here also was more fully recorded the acts that he had done, and the names of many hundreds that he had taken into his service, and how he had placed them in such habitations that he could neither by length of days nor decays of nature be dissolved. And then they read to him some of the worthy acts that some of his servants had done, and how they had subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword. Out of weakness they were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, and turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Then they read again in another part of the records of the house, for it was showed how willing their Lord was to receive into his favor any, even any, though they were in times past had offered great affronts to his person and proceedings. Here also were several other histories of many other famous things, all of which Christian had a view, as of things both ancient and modern, together with prophecies and predictions of things that have their certain accomplishment, both to the dread and amazement of enemies and the comfort and solace of pilgrims. The next day they took him and had him into the armory, where they showed him all manner of furniture, which their Lord had provided for pilgrims, as sword, shield, helmet, breastplate, and all prayer, and shoes that would not wear out, And there were enough of this to harness out as many men for the service of the Lord as there be stars in the heaven for multitude. They also showed him some of the engines with which some of his servants had done wonderful things. They showed him Moses' rod, the hammer and nail with which Jael slew Sisera, the pitchers, the trumpets, the lamps too, with which Gideon put to flight the armies of Midian. And they showed him the ox goad, whereby Shamgar slew 600 men. And they showed him also the jawbone with which Samson did such mighty feats. They showed him more of the sling and stone with which David slew Goliath of Gath, and the sword also with which their Lord will kill the man of sin in the day that he shall rise up to the prey. And they showed him besides many excellent things with which Christian was much delighted. This done, they went to their rest again. Then I saw in my dream that on the morrow he got up to go forward. But they desired him to stay until the next day also. Then said they, "We will, if the day be clear, show you the Delectable Mountains," which they said would yet farther add to his comfort, because they were nearer to the desired haven than the place where at present he was. So he considered and stayed. And in the morning was up, they had him to the top of the house and bid him look south. So he did. And behold, at a great distance, he saw the most pleasant mountainous country, beautified with woods and vineyards and fruits of all sorts, flowers also with springs and fountains, very delectable to behold. Then he asked the name of the country, and they said it was Emmanuel's land. And it is as common, said they, as this hill is to go and for all the pilgrims. And when thou comest here, from thence you may see to the gate of the celestial city, as the shepherds that live there will make appear. Now he bethought himself of setting forward, and they were willing he should. But first they said, "Let us go again into the armory." And so they did, and when he came there, they harnessed him from head to foot, with what was of proof, lest perhaps he should meet with assaults in the way. He being therefore thus accoutred, walketh out with his friends to the gate, and there he asked the porter if he saw any pilgrim pass by. Then the porter answered, "Yes." "Pray, do you know him?" said he. "Well, I asked his name, and he told me it was Faithful." "Oh," said Christian, "I know him. He is my townsman, my near neighbor. He comes from the place where I was born. How far do you think he may go on before?" "Well, he is got by this time below the hill." "Well," said Christian, "good porter, the Lord be with thee, and add to all thy blessing much increase for the kindness you have showed to me." Then he began to go forward. But discretion, piety, charity, and prudence would accompany him down to the foot of the hill. So they went on together, reiterating their former discourses, until they came to go down the hill. Then said Christian, "As it was difficult coming up, so, as far as I can see, it is dangerous going down." "Yes," said Prudence, "so it is, for it is a hard matter for a man to go down into the valley of humiliation, as you are now, and to catch no slip by the way." Therefore they said, "Are we come to accompany you down the hill?" So he began to go down, but very warily. Yet he caught a slip or two. Then I saw in my dream that these good companions, when Christian was got down to the bottom of the hill, gave him a loaf of bread, a bottle of wine, and a cluster of raisins. And then he went his way. But now in this valley of humiliation, poor Christian was hard put to it. For he had gone but a little way, when he spied a foul fiend coming over the fields to meet him. His name is Apollyon. Then did Christian begin to be afraid, and to cast his mind whether to go back or stand his ground. But he considered again that he had no armor for his back, and therefore thought that to turn the back to him might give him greater advantage, with ease to pierce him with his darts. Therefore he resolved to venture and stand his ground. For thought he, "Had I no more than mine eye than the saving of my life, 'twould be the best way to stand." So he went on, and Apollyon met him. Now the monster was hideous to behold. He was clothed with scales like a fish, and they are his pride. He had wings like a dragon, feet like a bear, and out of his belly came fire and smoke, and his mouth was as the mouth of a lion. And when he had come up to Christian, he beheld him with a disdainful countenance, and thus began to question with him. Apollyon said, "Whence come you, and whither are you bound?" "I am come from the city of destruction, which is the place of all evil, and am going to the city of Zion." "By this I perceive thou art one of my subjects, for all that country is mine, and I am the prince and god of it." How is it, then, that you have now run away from your king? Were it not that I hope you may do me some more service, I would strike thee now at one blow to the ground. I, said Christian, was born indeed in your dominions, but your service was hard, and your wages such as a man could not live on, for the wages of sin is death. Therefore, when I had come to years, I did as other considerate persons do, look out, and perhaps I might mend myself. There is no prince that will thus lightly lose his subject, neither will I as yet lose thee. But since thou complainest of thy service and wages, be content to go back. What our country will afford, I do here promise to give thee. But I have let myself to another, even to the king of princes, and how can I with fairness go back with you? As you have done in this, according to the proverb, changed a bad for a worse, but it is ordinary for those that have professed themselves his servants, after a while to give him the slip, and return again to me. Do thou so also, and all shall be well. I have given him my faith, said Christian, and sworn my allegiance to him. How then can I go back from this and not be hanged as a traitor? But you did the same to me, said Apollyon. And yet I am willing to pass by all, if you will now return again and go back. What I promised thee, said Christian, was in my non-age. And besides, I count that the prince under whose banner I now stand is able to absolve me, yes, and to pardon also what I did as to my compliance with you. And besides, O you destroying Apollyon, to speak truth, I like his service, his wages, his servants, his government, and his country better than thine. Therefore, leave off to persuade me further. I am his servant, and I will follow him. Consider again, said Apollyon, when you are in cold blood, what thou art likely to meet with in the way that you go. You know that for the most part his servants come to an ill end, because they are transgressors against me and my ways. How many of them have been put to shameful deaths? And besides, thou countest his service better than mine, whereas he never came yet from the place where he is to deliver any that served him out of our hands. But as for me, how many times, as all the world very well knows, have I delivered either by power or fraud those that have faithfully served me from him and his, though taken by them? And so I will deliver thee. His forbearing at present to deliver them is on purpose to try their love, whether they will cleave to him in the end. And as for the ill end you say they come to, that is more glorious in their account. But for present deliverance they do not much expect it, for they stay for their glory, and then shall they have it, when their prince comes in his, and the glory of his angels. Apollyon said, Thou hast already been unfaithful in thy service to him, and how dost thou think to receive wages of him? Wherein, said Christian, O Apollyon, have I been unfaithful to him? Apollyon, you did faint at the first setting out, when you were almost choked in the gulf of despond, and did attempt wrong ways to be rid of thy burden, whereas thou should have stayed till thy prince had taken it off. Thou didst sinfully sleep and lose thy choice things. Thou wast also almost persuaded to go back at the sight of the lions. And when thou talkest of thy journey, and of what thou heard and seen, thou art inwardly desirous of vain glory in all that thou sayest or doest. Christian said, All this is true, and much more which you have left out. But the prince whom I serve and honor is merciful and ready to forgive. But besides, these infirmities possess me in thy country. For there I sucked them in, and I have groaned unto them, and been sorry for them, and have obtained pardon of my prince. Then Apollyon broke out into a grievous rage, saying, I am an enemy to this prince. I hate his person, his laws, and people. I am come out on purpose to withstand thee. Apollyon, beware what you do, for I am in the king's highway, the way of holiness. Therefore take heed to yourself. Then Apollyon straddled quite over the whole breadth of the way, and said, I am void of fear in this matter. Prepare thyself to die, for I swear by my infernal den thou shalt go no further. Here I will spill thy soul. And with that he threw a flaming dart at his breast. but Christian had a shield in his hand, with which he caught it, and so prevented the danger of that. Then did Christian draw, for he saw it was time to bestir him, and Apollyon was fast made at him, throwing darts as thick as hail, by the which, notwithstanding all that Christian could do to avoid it, Apollyon wounded him in his head, his hand, and his foot. This made Christian give a little back, and Apollyon, therefore, followed his work amain, and Christian took again courage and resisted as manfully as he could. This sore combat lasted for above half a day, even till Christian was almost quite spent. For you must know that Christian, by reason of his wounds, must needs grow weaker and weaker. Then Apollyon, espying his opportunity, began to gather up close to Christian, and wrestling with him, gave him a dreadful fall, and with that Christian's sword flew out of his hand. Then said Apollyon, I am sure of you now. And with that he almost pressed him to death, so that Christian began to despair of life. But as God would have it, while Apollyon was fetching of his last blow, thereby to make a full end of this good man, Christian nimbly reached out his hand for his sword and caught it, saying, Rejoice not against me, O my enemy. When I fall, I shall rise. And with that he gave him a deadly thrust, which made him give back as one that had received his mortal wound. Christian, perceiving that, made at him again, saying, Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. And with that, Apollyon spread forth his dragon's wings and sped him away, that Christian saw him no more. In this combat no man can imagine, unless he had seen and heard as I did, what yelling and hideous roaring Apollyon made all the time of the fight. He spake like a dragon, and on the other side, what sighs and groans burst from Christian's heart. I never saw him all the while give so much as one pleasant look, till he perceived he had wounded Apollyon with his two-edged sword. Then indeed he did smile and look upward. But it was the dreadfulest fight that I ever saw. So when the battle was over, Christian said, I will here give thanks to him that has delivered me out of the mouth of the lion, to him that did help me against Apollyon. And so he did, saying, Great Beelzebub, the captain of this fiend, designed my ruin. Therefore, to this end, he sent him harnessed out, and he with rage that hellish was did fiercely me engage. But blessed Michael helped me, and I by dint of sword did quickly make him fly. Therefore, to him let me give lasting praise and thanks, and bless his holy name always. Then there came to him a hand with some of the leaves of the tree of life, the which Christian took and applied to the wounds that he had received in the battle, and was healed immediately. He also sat down in that place to eat bread, and to drink of the bottle that was given him a little before, so that being refreshed, he addressed himself to his journey, with his sword drawn in his hand, for he said, I know not but some other enemy may be at hand. But while he met with no other affront from Apollyon, quite throughout this valley. Now at the end of the valley was another called the Valley of the Shadow of Death, and Christian must needs go through it, because the way to the celestial city lay through the midst of it. Now this valley was a very solitary place. The prophet Jeremiah thus describes it, a wilderness, a land of deserts and of pits, a land of drought and of the shadow of death, a land that no man but a Christian passes through, and where no man dwelt. Now here Christian was worse put to it than in his fight with Apollyon, as by this sequel you shall see. I then saw in my dream that when Christian was got up to the borders of the shadow of death, there met him two men, children of them that brought up an evil report of the good land, making haste to go back, to whom Christian spoke as follows, Whither are you going? And they said, Back, back! And we would have you do so too, if either life or peace is prized by you. Why, what's the matter? Said Christian. Matter, they said. We're going that way as you are going, and went as far as we durst. And indeed, we're almost past coming back, for had we gone a little farther, we had not been here to bring the news to thee. But what have you met with? Said Christian. Why, we are almost in the valley of the shadow of death. And by that good hap we looked before us and saw the danger before we came to it. And what have you seen? Said Christian. Seen? Why, the valley itself, which is as dark as pitch, We also saw there the hobgoblins, satyrs, and dragons of the pit. We heard also in that place a continual howling and yelling, as if a people under unutterable misery, who sat there bound in affliction and irons. Over that valley hangs the discouraging clouds of confusion. Death also does always spread his wings over it. In a word, it is in every whit dreadful, being utterly without order. Then said Christian, I perceive not yet by what you have said, but that this is my way to the desired haven. Be it thy way, we will not choose it for ours. So they parted, and Christian went on his way, but still with his sword drawn in his hand, for fear lest he should be assaulted. I saw then in my dreams, as far as the valley reached, that there was on the right hand a very deep ditch. That ditch it is, into which the blind have led the blind in all ages, have both there miserably perished. Again, behold, on the left hand there was a very dangerous quag, in which if even a good man falls, he finds no bottom for his foot to stand on. Into that quag King David once did fall, and had no doubt therein been smothered, had not he that is able plucked him out. The pathway was here also exceedingly narrow, therefore good Christian was the more put to it. For when he sought in the dark to shun the ditch one hand, he was ready to tip over into the mire on the other. Also, when he sought to escape the mire without great carefulness, he would be ready to fall into the ditch. Thus he went on. And I heard him here sigh bitterly, for besides the dangers mentioned above, the pathway was here so dark that oft-times, when he would lift up his foot to set forward, he knew not where or upon what he should see it next. About the midst of this valley I perceived the mouth of hell to be, and it stood also hard by the wayside. Now, thought Christian, what shall I do? And ever and anon the flame and smoke would come out in such abundance, with sparks and hideous noises, things that cared not for Christian's sword, as did Apollyon before, that he was forced to put up his sword and betake himself to another weapon, called all prayer. So he cried in my hearing, O Lord, I beseech you, deliver my soul. And thus he went on a great while, yet still the flames would be reaching toward him. Also he heard doleful voices and rushings to and fro, so that sometimes he thought he should be torn in pieces or trodden down like mire in the street. This frightful sight was seen, and these dreadful noises were heard by him for several miles together. And coming to a place where he thought he heard a company of fiends coming toward to meet him, he stopped and began to muse what he had best to do. Sometimes he had half a thought to go back. Then again he thought he might be halfway through the valley. He remembered also how he had already vanquished many a danger, and that the danger of going back might be much more than to go forward, so he resolved to go on. Yet the fiends seemed to be nearer and nearer. But when they had come almost even with him, he cried out with a most vehement voice, I will walk in the strength of the Lord God. So they gave back and came no further. One thing I should not let slip. I took notice that how poor Christian was so confounded that he did not know his own voice, and thus I perceived it. Just when he was come over against the mouth of the burning pit, one of the wicked ones got behind him and sneaked up softly to him and whisperingly suggested many grievous blasphemies to him, which he verily thought had proceeded from his own mind. This put Christian more to it than anything that he had met with before. Even to think that he should now blaspheme him that he loved so much before. Yet if he could have helped it, he would not have done it. But he had not the discretion either to stop his ears or to know from whence those blasphemies came. When Christian had traveled in this disconsolate condition some considerable time, he thought he heard the voice of a man as going before him. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear none ill. For thou art with me. Then he was glad, for these reasons. First, because he gathered from there that some who feared God were in this valley as well as himself. Secondly, for that he perceived God was with them, though in that dark and dismal state. And why not, thought he, with me? Though by reason of the impediment which attends this place, I cannot perceive it. Thirdly, for what he hoped, he would overtake them to have company by and by. So he went on, and called to him that was before, but he knew not what to answer, for that he also thought himself to be alone. and by the day broke. And then, said Christian, he has turned the shadow of death into the morning. Now morning had come. He looked back, not out of desire to return, but to see by the light of day what hazards he had gone through with the dark. So he saw more perfectly the ditch that was on the one hand and the quag that was on the other. Also how narrow the way which led between them both, and how he saw the hobgoblins and the satyrs and the dragons of the pit, but all afar off, for after break of day they came not nigh, yet they were discovered by him according to that which is written. He discovers deep things out of darkness and bringeth out to light the shadow of death. Now was Christian much affected with his deliverance from all the dangers of his solitary way. Which dangers, though he feared them more before, yet he saw them more clearly now, because the light of the day made them conspicuous to him. And about this time the sun was rising, and this was another mercy to Christian, for you must note that though the first part of the valley of the shadow of death was dangerous, yet this second part, which he was yet to go, was, if possible, far more dangerous. For at the end of the place where he now stood, even to the end of the valley, the way was all along set so full of snares, traps, gins and nets here, and so full of pits, pitfalls, and deep holes and shelvings down there, that had it now been dark, as it was when he came the first part of the way, had he had 1,000 souls, they had in reason been cast away. But as I said, just now the sun was rising. Thus he said, his candle shineth on my head, and by his light I can go through darkness.